You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of June 20th, 2017, and episode number 318. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, this week, we've got some interesting news. We got some controversial stuff. You know, you got to stir the pot every now and again to keep the good stuff floating to the top. I don't know if that sounds good or not, but I guess that'll work. So tonight, we're going to have an update on the Chicago Phantom, Owlman, Mothman, Giant Bat, Mysterious Flying Creature, whatever you want to call it at home if you're keeping score. And we're also going to talk an archive on the famous Brown Lady of Raynham Hall. That ghost photograph, if you remember, is now available, which is cool because I remember reading this article years ago, and it's been gone off those intranets. Audible pareidolia is a real thing. We're going to be talking about that tonight. And we're also, why not? We're going to be calling some paranormal investigators out, not by name, but an interesting story here that I kind of got a kick out of. And some people are not, but it's got to be talked about. It's all over the news, so we have to talk about it. And a man spots a trooper of a man flying during a storm. That sounds weird, but trust me, it's interesting. And that story is actually solved. And we'll talk about NASA. They got a couple of stories. One's a flop, and one's a good one here. NASA makes an announcement of more exoplanets by Kepler. And we'll also have the update on the NASA Wallops cloud experiment to be continued. And this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, IMHS, is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is actually the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics to quantum physics to cosmology and psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply our term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.com. .org. Events listing. Just looking at that now, and it's not updated again. Who's in charge of this website? Oh, wait, that would be me. Again, a week behind on this, but I don't really see much of anything that is actually outdated. It's actually up to date, so it's no big deal. Number of events taking place over the next couple of weeks. It's the heat of the summer. Well, no, it's not really the – well, looks like there's a lot in July. So we got a lot coming up right now. We have the Haunted America Conference 2016 taking place this weekend. If you're anywhere near the Illinois area, that's in Alton, Illinois, then it looks like there's a big jump into July here with ghost events. The Roswell UFO Festival, June 29th through July 2nd, and that's in Roswell, obviously, New Mexico. And cryptozoology, I don't have any until, well, August, it appears. But again, it's not an all-inclusive list. I did miss some stuff. And if you're interested in checking out this list, go to ParanewsInsider.com and click on the events tab at the top. And if I'm missing something that you know about that's a pretty decent-sized event, I don't care if it's Joe's Paranormal Conference taking place in Poughkeepsie, New York, in somebody's backyard, as long as somebody's speaking at it, let me know, and I'll get it on this list, and I'll talk about it here during the show. It's a pretty decent list. I think it's one of the better ones that you're going to find out there. But these events are constantly popping up. People are constantly adding names and adding information to these all these conferences, conventions. So I'll do my best to get it up on here for you guys if you're wanting to list anything here. And you can get a hold of me at insider@paranewsinsider.com or find me on Facebook, Twitter. I'm there. And all you have to do is let me know. Geez, it's easy. Or on the website, too. I have a little form you can fill out and send me a message, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Don't do it right now because I won't respond until probably tomorrow at this point. And speaking of events, Kecksburg UFO Festival. I've mentioned this before, probably the last five shows. Friday, July 28th through Sunday, July 30th in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And this is taking place close to the location of where a strange UFO crashed back in December of 1965. And myself and Colin Schneider, also of WCJV, will also be there speaking, which is really cool because he and I have never shared the stage together at all with anything. I've seen him at a number of conventions. I've talked to him or spoke at his school, I should say. A couple of years ago, it was a lot of fun. So it's going to be fun to share the stage with him, Stan Gordon, and of course, Ron Murphy, who had the book of the week last week. And if you missed that, that was On Ghosts. The name of the book was On Ghosts. So great author, great historian, folklorist. And Colin is the youngster of the group, 16 years old, an excellent researcher in his own right. And of course, Stan Gordon, multi-decade researcher and investigator, author, you name it. And then there's me. Wrote a couple books, have a radio show. You might not have ever heard of it, but it's going to be a great lineup, a great mixture of speakers, a great lineup of different things that we're going to talk about, from UFOs to Bigfoot, cryptozoology, past and present, to the foundation of UFO research and investigation, which is what I'm talking about, Cryptozoology 101 from Colin Schneider, and Unexplained World of Chestnut Ridge, a hike through Western Pennsylvania's Goblin Universe, is Ron Murphy's focus at the event. So it's going to be a fun time, going to be interesting. It's going to be hot, but it's also going to be a lot of fun. The Kecksburg UFO Festival is nothing like you've ever experienced. It is a celebration. It's a lot of fun. There's a parade, a UFO parade. They get all the fire trucks involved. There's a burnout contest, hot dog eating contest. There was a little kids had a tractor pull, which is weird. I've never seen such a thing. It was kind of cool. Carnival rides, carnival food, people in tinfoil hats all gathered in the same place. It's something that you do not want to miss at all. It's a lot of fun. And go there. Just go there. And if you're interested in seeing more of the events, all the stuff that's going on, I'll post a link in the chat room. And if you're going to visit tonight, you're going to visit us in the chat room. We have a new chat room. It's not the same one that we've had for a while. We're kind of in between chat rooms. And we're using one that you're probably familiar with. So if you pop in, you'll probably recognize this old chat room thing. But it's a lot of fun. So come on down, enjoy the chat room. It's a lot of fun. There's room for you, so don't be afraid. And still be able to share some, obviously all these links will still be in the chat room. So if you want to sneak peek at these stories and some of the stuff that I'm talking about, get in the chat room. If not, you're going to have to wait. You have to wait a couple of days for me to upload all these to Facebook one at a time. And sometimes I'll do two a day. I think I have enough stories this week. I'm going to be doing two, I think, for a couple of days. Speaking of events other than Kecksburg, I'll be at the Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania event on August 5th. I have no idea what I'm talking about there. Just strange stuff in PA, I guess. August 19th, I'll be at the Goose Project 2.0, the MS fundraiser at the Prospect Place in Trinway, Ohio. I'll be talking about cryptozoology there. So I'm very fortunate this year to be speaking at ghost events. Was at a Bigfoot event, and I'll be at a UFO event, talking about a variety of subjects. It's a lot of fun to talk about all the unique types of anomalous things that are out there. And check it out. Get there to one of these events. And again, check out the listing at paranewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top, anywhere that I'm going to be at, and make a notation of that. I know I'm not special. You've probably never heard of me speak before, but I try to bring some good information – And a lot of stuff that I talk about throughout this show are things that I try to talk about. I'm not afraid to speak the truth. Let's just put it to you that way. I'm not there to go with the grain, you know, and I'm not there to go against the grain, but to just to speak the truth, because the truth needs to be heard. And sometimes we just kind of ignore those things. That being said, we're going to jump into cryptid news and an update on the Chicago Phantom. Well, that's what Lon Strickler has officially stamped on it. He calls it the Chicago Phantom. I think it's a pretty cool name, even though Lon has the website, Phantoms and Monsters. I think that's kind of, I don't know, he's kind of pulling it in his direction. But it's still cool. It's a cool name, Chicago Phantom. Kind of gives you a cool visual in your mind, and I think it would look great on a t-shirt. Well, the Chicago Phantom has been seen once again over the skies of Chicago. It's been a couple of weeks, actually 2 weeks, in fact. And again, call it a giant bat, owlman, mothman, or as Lon Strickler calls it, from Phantoms and Monsters, call it the Chicago Phantom. Well, no matter what you call it, the sightings are continuing to come in. And this latest sighting occurred on June 17th that again marked a silence of reports of exactly 2 weeks since June 3rd. So exactly 14 days between sightings. Weird. I don't know if that's a coincidence or what. Now, this sighting occurred near the Navy Pier, which is, if you're not familiar with Chicago, that's like right downtown, right by the water there. It's a pretty populated area no matter what time of day. There's a lot of places to shop there on the pier. It's pretty busy, and people are constantly looking at the water. So I'm sure that there will be more reports of this particular sighting, hopefully within the next couple of days, and we can kind of narrow down what exactly this thing is. The sighting occurred, like I said, on the Navy Pier. It's close to a pair of sightings that happened on May 19th, where one account is where two large creatures were seen near the Chicago River, a little bit more downriver, but really toward downtown Chicago. And downtown Chicago kind of hugs the waterfront there. It's kind of a freeway in the middle, but it's kind of hugging the water. And there was another sighting. It was just a little bit west of where this current sighting is. Now, a report to UFO Clearinghouse says, let me just read the whole thing here. Quote, I was out for a late jog on Saturday evening about 7 o'clock p.m., which is June 17th, and was taking my usual route along the lakefront jogging trail heading toward the Navy Pier. As I passed Ohio Street Beach and headed toward the pier, I saw what looked like a giant bat fly from what looked like under the bridge that holds up North Lakeshore Drive. It flew parallel to East Grand Avenue and then up and over the trees toward the water treatment plant. The whole incident only lasted a few seconds, and getting any exact details was hard due to the low light. I can make an educated guess and say that it looked like it was the height of an average man at about 6 feet tall, but I also was maybe 15 to 20 feet away from when I saw it. It looked like a great big bat. Solid black, but it stood out against the building and had a wingspan that must have been at least 7 to 8 feet from tip to tip. It was silent as far as I could tell, but there was a lot of city noise in that area with traffic and whatnot. I know I was not the only one who saw it, as about 6 to 7 others noticed it, and I heard more than one person say, "Look at that." As it flew, you could tell it was flapping its large wings, gaining speed and altitude, till it cleared the trees and headed off toward the water treatment plant. When I reached the point where I could look out toward the plant, it was gone. I checked my watch and that time and note the time at 7:08 p.m., and the weather was cloudy. We had storms pass through the area earlier today, and it looked like more were on the way. There was visible lightning over the lake at the time that this incident occurred. I went home after my jog was completed and looked up sightings of giant bats in the city and was shocked by how many there were recently. This is how I got the info on where to report this to you, unquote. I really don't know what to think of this. I mean, these reports are coming in. There's a lot of descriptions that sound very much the same. And they've all mentioned that this looks like a giant bat. And they've all said about the same thing, 6 foot tall. And they've all said about the same thing with the wingspan, 7 feet. So I'm not sure if they're reading these reports and then adjusting what they saw to these other reports. I don't know. Or is this just, I don't know, maybe some giant ongoing hoax that people are just emailing certain places over and over to just to add to this. But it's not really gaining that much traction other than a couple of small news sites and a couple of paranormal news sites. It's really not getting a whole lot of attention. They've had some small stories run in local media, but it's buried. It's buried way down deep. So it's not getting the attention that I don't know. If it did get more attention, it might turn into a little bit of paranoia, and you would hear a lot more stories, a lot more hoaxes turning in from people who are just trying to jump on the bandwagon. I don't know. We're just going to have to keep getting these reports and just kind of go from there and see what can happen. If anybody can get a photograph of this thing or a video of this thing or I don't know. We'll just have to see. But not that that's going to be conclusive because obviously, as you know, there's a lot of hoax photos and hoax videos out there of different things. So you never know what you're going to see. I don't know. It's weird that no one, when we hear these stories, they all say the same thing too about no one's mentioned about having heard of this story before, but they find out online after the fact and immediately report it. That's like the fourth time I've heard that. So it's kind of weird too. Now this latest sighting is the 13th report since May of this year and 18th overall in Chicago since 2011. And there was a, you know, obviously five reports there that happened in 2011. Then it's gone away for a few years now and it's back. It's weird. And Lon Strickler, who is covering this story pretty much in depth, phantomsandmonsters.com, covering this in really good depth. He's got a map. It's a Google map, and he's kept it updated. So if you have the old link, it's continuously updated. So when you go in there, all that new information will pop up, and you can get that new information as it is updated. And I'll throw that in the chat room as well, so you guys can take a look at that. And there it is. And we're going to go to ghost news, where I'm going to stir the pot a little bit. First, we're going to talk about the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall. Never liked that name, Brown Lady. I don't know. Just kind of, I don't know. Just weird. Anyway, this is a historic photo, and I'm sure everyone here who's listening to the show has seen this photograph at one time or another. It's probably, I would say, the most recognizable historical ghost photograph ever seen. I don't know, maybe next to the Mary Todd Lincoln hoaxed photograph with Abraham Lincoln looking over her shoulder. That one was a hoax. Yeah, sorry. Didn't mean to burst your bubble on that one. But in regards to the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall, what do you really know about it? Other than a lot of people know that it was in a magazine in the early 1900s, but now, for me, I've never really had much of an interest in ghost photographs since I feel that a lot of these, even if they are genuine, are more than likely something dealing with psychokinesis. It's a psychokinetic thing and potentially created from the viewer and not any external source such as a ghost. And I think a lot of that occurs with ghost investigators when they're in a location. I think a lot of their stuff is imprinted from their own hopes and dreams. And their kind of thoughts on how things should appear or how they should hear this type of evidence, whether it's EVPs or anything else. I think a lot of it's just done by the observer, more or less. But I think a lot of these photographs are hoaxes, and a lot of them have been proven to be hoaxes over the years, especially ones that happened in the late 1800s and early 1900s with the age of spirit photography. But my thoughts aside, I stumbled across information taken from a journal entry in the Society for Psychical Research that discussed the historical photograph and the investigation conducted by the SPR, which is the Society for Psychical Research, which was formed in 1882 in Cambridge, England. It was the first geared toward the research and documentation of psychic phenomena. And the ASPR was created 3 years later, 1885, first took place in Boston, Massachusetts, and then moved to New York City not too long after that, where it's still there today. The ASPR is also still around today. And I remember reading this article on some of the early research on this this actual photograph and how there was a lot of speculation about it, a lot of different things about it. So I just kind of tossed it aside and never really thought about it much. Not into, again, not really huge into the ghost photograph things, especially the historical ones, where the overwhelming majority were thought to be hoaxes on, you know, on purpose. But how do you know otherwise? You know, how, what's the purpose of really investigating that anymore? But a lot of people in the SPR were not keen on the photograph, although some people, like Harry Price, which I'm sure you probably heard of, felt it was the real deal. And the photograph itself, I mean, as you know, has gone on to legendary status as one of the purportedly best examples of a ghost photograph in history. Now, a man named Tom Ruffles, he's put together some archived information to bring us an article titled, quote, "The Brown Lady of Raynham Hall, Reexamination of a Classic Ghost Photograph and Possible Explanation," unquote. And the article is available as several types of files, but I read it pretty easily as a PDF file. I just clicked on the PDF file, and it just popped up, and I read it. So 9 pages that's got a couple of photographs. Obviously, the top is the photograph of the Brown Lady. It's the original photograph, which is extended outwards. A lot of times when you see this in a book, it's cropped, and it's cropped to take out some of the exterior details, which people thought was the explanation to the photograph, which I'll explain here. And this summarizes the entire story about what happened on September 19th, 1936 in Norfolk, England. A man named Indre Shira and Captain Hubert C. Provand visited Raymond Hall at about 8 o'clock in the morning, and they were there until just after 4 o'clock p.m. taking photographs. And it was at 4 p.m. when they were taking photographs at the bottom of this particular staircase. They had just taken a photograph where Provand was under the black curtain, exposing the film plates, while Shira manually triggered a flash gun. Now, suddenly, Shira stated that he spotted a figure walking down the stairs. Now, the pair quickly took another photograph, which is the famous one that has been making the rounds since 1936. And this photograph appeared in Country Life magazine back in 1936, the first place that it was ever seen. And that magazine is actually still in existence today. It's actually owned by Time Incorporated or Time Life, whatever they call themselves nowadays. An investigation was launched pretty much immediately after the magazine hit the newsstands. And the SPR and a lot of other people were intrigued by this photograph and wanted to get to the bottom of this to see if there was an explanation. Now, one of the leading explanations immediately was that this was camera shake. Now, this explanation was thought of because if you look on the wide photograph of this, you could see on the left side that it appears like the stairs are broken and there is a photograph hanging on the wall that seems to be duplicated. However, that's not true. I thought this too when I first started studying this photograph. But when I read this information years later, I realized that it was wrong. One of the issues with the shake thing is that there's no other discernible areas on the photograph that would indicate that this is going on. There's no other blurry parts of this picture or anything that's broken. And you would expect that to see by bright objects, not dark areas. But that's not the case. And subsequent photographs by investigators show that the stairway appears in person as it did in the famous Brown Lady photograph. And the photograph that's thought to be duplicated there on the left is actually just part of the paneling. And the stairway is actually, there was a kind of a landing there in the middle. I think they say the 13th stair. Creepy, I know. But there's a kind of a landing so that the sides are extended on purpose. It's not just a piece of the photograph. Now, there's a second explanation that there was a hole in the bellows which let light in that's caused this ghost to be seen. Now, the only issue with this is that no other photograph taken that day at the hall showed any light leakage at all, which is weird. And there's a third explanation, but I'm not going to tell you. Not yet, anyway, but I'm going to tell you first that you're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And you're currently listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we're talking about the brown lady at Raynham Hall and the famous picture that you've probably all seen 100 times over and over. But a third explanation, I'll tell you now, was that this photograph was made from a composite of two or even more plates showing the staircase and a figure morphed together. They didn't feel that this was taken from one photo, and because this would take a couple of minutes for these photographs to develop. So you could easily go in there, add something in the background, move it out real quick, and it would show up on the long exposure. So it would show up in the photograph. They don't think that this was how this was done. Leading theory is that this was made from a composite, probably of two plates put together, especially since it was very dark in that stairway at the time of day, even for being 4 o'clock p.m. Now, this was a popular spirit photography technique. It's been used for decades prior to 1936, but both of the men involved totally denied this. And a lot of people took these guys on their word and said, you know, I trust these guys. I believe what they're saying. So maybe this was a ghost. However, Shira had told Lady Townsend of Raynham Hall that he had wanted to capture the ghost on film and wanted to come at night to do so. However, she did not want this and only allowed them to photograph during the day. Another interesting note that came after the fact was that Shira's wife was on hand during the photographing of the hall, and Lady Townsend stated that she was acting as a psychic, that she was kind of setting up or telling them where to take pictures at, which is a little weird. Now, in the article published in Country Life, Shira stated that he had no interest in the ghost, which made the photograph, at least in the article, seem a little bit more credible. But it kind of took people aback, especially Lady Townsend, who knew the story. She's like, why would you say that in the magazine? So that doesn't make sense. And that kind of takes away a little bit of the credibility behind this photograph. Now, Shira and Provind were not at the hall on behalf of Country Life magazine either. So what truly was their purpose? Now, once the photograph was published in the magazine, Shira began selling copies of the print. Was the image taken on that day really of the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall, who was Lady Dorothy Walpole, or was it photographic manipulation for profit and extended fame? Who knows? While this case has never officially been solved, many would think that this was due to trickery and how Shira acted before and after the photograph was published. So it's a lot of people see it as proof that the best picture of ghosts ever taken. But there's a shady, no pun intended, a shady story behind the photograph being taken, and the words of those that were involved is a little shaky. Again, no pun intended. The words are shaky as well. So we don't know what to believe. And obviously this happened quite a long time ago, and the original prints and some of the early photographs have not been located. Some people have to have some of these. And if we could get an older print, it would be a little bit easier to disseminate that information and maybe attempt to figure out what exactly happened to cause this, other than being a ghost, because we'd have no way to really determine that. And just because there isn't an explanation doesn't mean that there isn't one and that it's automatically a ghost. It's not how things work, unfortunately. And I'll throw the link in the chat room. And again, if you're not in the chat room, you're not listening live, and you're listening, I don't know, maybe you're sitting out back outside on the couch, you know, on your, in your, I don't know, in your backyard or whatever, that's cool. You don't have to be in the chat. I'm not going to chastise you for that. If you're listening on the way to work the following day, streaming live in your car, that's cool too. If you're listening tomorrow night, I don't care if you're listening to this, but you're not going to get this stuff in the chat room like you're going to. And again, this is an archived story. So the information is from, I think it was from 2009, and they kind of put it together again. And we're going to go, we're going to stay in the ghost area. We're going to talk about pareidolia. Pareidolia. You probably heard this before. This is coming from an article on a blog called Living Life in Full Spectrum. And it's titled, Audio Pareidolia is a Real Thing. Okay. This is a ghost hunter's blog, but this is just one article in a series that covers, quote, stuff paranormal investigators need to know, unquote. Well, that's pretty cool. And this one obviously covers audible pareidolia. Now, many have heard the term pareidolia and know it's pretty much when the mind takes random information and creates patterns, such as animals in clouds, Mother Teresa on a piece of toast, or mentioned this before, Jesus on a dog's butt. It's out there. Again, look it up. Jesus on a dog's butt. Search for it. Google it. You'll see the picture. It looks like Jesus and a butt. But what many don't realize is that pareidolia also applies to audio as well. It's not just religious seeing things and all these other things that have popped up in the news off and on, but it's also audible. And we may hear random noises in our audio recordings and think that these noises are actually words, and that these words say certain things that we expect them, you know, we expect to hear because we're in a certain location. We should expect to hear certain words. That is pretty much what this is all about. This is pretty much what pareidolia audible is all about. We're hearing things and putting them together in the context in which we think that they should be. And we see this on television shows all the time. And you've probably seen these where ghost investigators, they'll say that they, oh, we've captured an EVP. Then they'll flash on the screen what they think it says and then play the EVP. And many people will hear what they were told to hear. Then again, a lot of us, like myself, I only hear random noises. Like the TV show will say, Aunt Judy fell down the stairs. And then they'll play the clip and I'm like, I didn't hear Aunt Judy fall down the stairs. All I heard was, I don't know where they're getting that from. And a lot of EVPs I've heard sound like somebody left their digital recorder in the washing machine on the spin cycle. I don't know. But yeah, we hear what we want to hear sometimes, unfortunately. And noises such as the floor creaking, your hand, believe it or not, you know, if you're young, your hands make all sorts of noises when you move them. That's amplified, especially if you have your digital recorder on sensitive. It's going to pick up everything. And one other thing while I'm thinking about it that this article does not cover is the fact that most digital recorders, believe it or not, even if it's digital, has internal noise. And this internal noise isn't consistent. It happens every now and again. And it can also cause you to think that you're hearing voices or hearing sounds that are not really there. So many ghost investigators, you know, they'll deny this and say that their evidence doesn't fall into this category, that they're hearing exactly what happened. But I've heard that time and time over the years. I've heard people play their EVP without them telling me what they think it says and after, and I don't hear it. I usually don't hear it. Sometimes they're really good. I'm not going to say that everybody, but a lot of times it's just not what you think. I'm sorry. Now, the author does a great job of explaining various types of circumstances that can affect a ghost investigator, including background noise, as well as no noise at all, which doesn't really have to do with EVPs, but has to do with our ears. And when there's no noise at all, we're used to sitting around talking, and all of a sudden no one's talking and it's quiet, our brains will search for something. And sometimes this lack of input, the sensory deprivation, will trick our brains into hearing things that are not present. And one of the leading things that people report hearing, and I'm not talking paranormal, I'm talking people who are put into sensory deprivation tanks or people who are in places with no noise, will report hearing music. Yeah, weird. I've heard that a long time ago. And when I read it here, I was like, wow, cool. Somebody actually did their research. Now, I've investigated a number of cases dealing with audible pareidolia over the years. And one of my favorites, I probably shared this on the show before or as a guest on certain shows. There was a fan in a hallway that essentially created ghostly voices in other rooms. I think it was more towards the kitchen area. And they heard it down in the bedrooms, which were pretty far down the hallway. And only when the fan was on a certain setting, facing a certain way. And I heard it myself. I was a little freaked out when I first heard it. It did sound like people talking and laughing and saying different things. And you could hear words. It was really strange. But by cutting out the fan, you never heard it. I sat there for like 20 minutes. And then I thought, maybe it's the fan, because that's the only thing that's changing here. So I actually took the fan apart, cleaned the fan blades, and kind of cleaned around it. It was a little dirty. They had pets. It's understandable. It happens. Cleaned up the fan, put it all together, ran the fan, and the ghost disappeared. The ghost was gone. I think it was a little vibration on the fan blades, but it was still kind of spooky. But once I eliminated that, it was gone. So we have to consider, as paranormal investigators, sound. You know, we all get caught up in infrasound and all these high-tech things and tools and technology and different things, but it's something simple like that that can sometimes cause false positive, can be an explanation. Something else that she didn't mention that's just bit the tip of my mind was earthquakes. Sometimes earthquakes will cause tremors that you don't feel, but will cause a little bit of vibration in other objects that will make sounds. I've had that on at least one occasion where we went in to and looked at the data and was like, well, there's an earthquake that happened exactly at the same time we're recording. So we kind of had to throw our data to the wind. And let me get that link and throw it in the chat room. Boom. There it is. And we'll move on. We're going to move on to, well, not so nice topic, but it's got to be talked about. And since we're on the topic of paranormal investigators, ghost hunters, whatever you like, whatever you don't like, there's another article that's it's been getting a little traction. It's been getting a lot of attention. No one's really talking about it, I think, because some people, I think, feels that it maybe attacks them or whatever. But I think it's a really good article. It's not written as kind of hate speech or lashing out at the paranormal. It's just kind of, I mean, it's close. There's a couple of sentences here that I'm going to read some of this too, because this was just too good for me to paraphrase or for me to put in my own words. I felt that reading some of this is important because the way it just kind of comes across here. Now, this story focuses on what is called, or what this person calls, performance investigators. Performance investigators. I know that sounds weird. And it has a nice little logo on this this page here. It's a blog. It's from Blogspot. And it looks like the table of elements. You have a little square with the two letters. It's got P and I in it. And it has a scientific name below it that says Resultus Nunnicus Poserus Maximus, which I thought was kind of funny. This blog comes from the Numinous Den, a UK blog. UK-based blog that, and the title is, quote, Performance Investigators, a Paranormal Element, which is it's weird, but we'll talk about this, and it's kind of harsh a little bit, but and it calls some people out, not by name again. It calls out a lot of observations, I guess, on paranormal investigators, and some of which are not very nice. True, but not very nice. The author states there are a large number of people investigating ghosts, and there's a lot of serious people out there that are seriously doing some good work. They're doing I don't want to go out on a limb and say science, but trying their best to do the right thing, getting data, gathering information, trying to do it correctly, trying to get the help of other people, trying to do the right thing. Unfortunately, those of us that are out there trying to do the right thing, and I'm not saying that I'm better than anybody, or I'm not saying that I'm not lumped into all this stuff in some fashion, but those that are serious are seriously outnumbered by those who that the author again refers to as performance investigators. Now, what are performance investigators? The second paragraph of this post says it all, and I'll read it directly from this post. Quote, these performance investigators offer very little in the way of, well, even substantiated raw data, but are considered by many in the paranormal fields to be of high regard. This speaks a little to the charisma factor discussed in the previous post, as the performance investigators are more about the action of being seen performing investigations than gaining or presenting results. So that last sentence there pretty much sums it up pretty well. The performance investigators are more about the action of being seen performing investigations than gaining or presenting results. And that's what a performance investigator's definition is. Very well put, I think, and something I completely agree with. And when I read that, I got it. I understood what he was saying. And then he got into more detail. Actually, I don't even know if it was a he. It could have been a she. But there's no name attached to this. And we see tons of groups showing their pictures of them standing out front of different locations, different ghost hunting venues or cemeteries with their arms folded and stating on social media that they've collected a lot of evidence. But that evidence is either lacking or non-existent over time. The author points out that, quote, one fairly public ghost hunter says she develops makeup for women that makes them look good through night vision cameras, unquote. And that, my friends, puts things into perspective, exactly what this story or this particular blog is talking about. Is this all about looking good for the cameras to make it look like they know what they're doing? Or is this actually about accomplishing something? Another great line from this post is, quote, it seems that many in that genre feel the need to have a well-filtered headshot and post regularly about their paranormal exploits, as well as every conflict entanglement they encounter. Then you'll see the many posts threatening to quit the paranormal field because they, quote, simply can't take the drama anymore, unquote. These posts are cryptically written to garner sympathetic, are you okay posts from fans begging them to stay. They, of course, had no intention of leaving anyway. It's all part of the facade that keeps followers entertained, unquote. And the author points out as well that it seems most in the paranormal are not familiar with not only science, but the work of parapsychology and are fooled by faulty results of others of the popular ghost hunting tools such as ghost boxes and K2 meters. These beliefs that these tools magically connect with ghosts has filtered through the field as pretty much fact based on the experiences of others, which no one seems to question, or those who do question are, again, vastly outnumbered by those who believe. And unfortunately, it trickles down. It creates culture of belief that these tools actually do what other people think they do. Even when I've met people that say, I don't think this is really working or doing what people say, but then they fall in line when they're doing an investigation and act the part. That's pretty much what this guy is saying here, this person's saying. But it goes deeper. As the author says, quote, but the performance investigators have their own subculture of belief that is structured around them. They are the direct line of action with the phenomena that are allegedly investigating. But investigating isn't really the right term when you see posts like, the spirits at the insert location here were so responsive tonight, and we're so happy to have reconnected with them again. This is not an investigation. Now when you're speaking to of the phenomena like it's an old college buddy, it's theater, unquote. Very well put. Very true. I'll continue and read the next paragraph here where it says, quote, not only are they building a narrative that they are connected with a paranormal entity, but they're building a brand, their brand. Not surprisingly, followers flock in droves to these performance investigators because they build knowingly or unknowingly, a belief-based community support system for many. There are also performance investigators that build a large following, not due to their investigations or any footage or audio they may garner, but due to their physical appearance alone, unquote. The author then picks on the photos that many of these groups put out and says that men look like wrestling promos and the females look as if they're more concerned about a modeling contract than finding paranormal evidence. And that's true, too. I always laugh when I see some of these pictures. You've probably seen them yourself on Facebook and Twitter. I don't know what I don't know what some people are trying to prove here, but another paragraph here I want to read real quick is just after those kind of comments where it says, quote, how serious can you be taken if most of what you post on Facebook involves more about you and your public persona and less about the study you claim to live for? I think we'd all love to see one piece of interesting or compelling evidence rather than another cross-armed badass ground perspective photo of you in low light or another bikini body or boudoir shot from a serious investigator. Yes, these folks have even taken to signing autographs at conventions. It's self-made celebrity at its best, unquote. Very true. And there's a lot more to this blog post, but essentially boils down to that there are many that are in the paranormal for obviously the wrong reason. It's just to serve the ego, and that many are there in the paranormal. They seemingly get in, pulled into the gravity of what these other people are doing, and then that leads to them making the same things. And this has been going on for a while. I saw it before the TV shows when people were fighting to get into newspapers and to become famous or the most popular group on the block. And then the TV shows have just poured out the individualism, how people are trying to be better than everybody else or more popular, more famous. I mean, we have to focus on what's really important with this field, and that's finding real results by doing real work and not parading around like a large-scale cosplay event, which is kind of what I feel like sometimes. When I see some of these events, I see some of these videos, I see some of these Facebook pages, I see links to groups all over the world, and it's just, what is going on out there? Are we trying to find evidence of ghosts, or are we just putting on this performance theater? And, you know, as far as people being these so-called experts, I see a lot of people who their only claim to fame is going around to different places to investigate. Or they've met Zach Bagan, or they met so-and-so, or they talked to so-and-so at a convention, or they met so-and-so here or there. I mean, how does that make you an expert? How does that define you as better than anybody else? Or why would you have a website of yourself when all you do is go to these places and hang out? I mean, think about it this way. And this is kind of how, when I first read this story, I was trying to think of a way to relate. And I thought I was watching a baseball game at the same time, watching the Canadians. And I thought, you know, I've been to a lot of games and I watch a lot of baseball games on television. I've been to a lot of stadiums as well, minor league and major league baseball stadiums. So does that make me a better baseball player? No, it doesn't. I mean, I wish it would. That would be great. But unfortunately, no, it doesn't. Just as watching a television show on doctors would make you a better doctor. It doesn't. So I don't understand why people think that just by going to a haunted location or rubbing elbows with other people who do this makes you a better paranormal investigator or somebody with more clout or knowledge than somebody else. It doesn't. It doesn't. Even writing books, you know, I'll throw this out there, which is I'm going to talk about this, a book of the week on ghosts coming right up here. And just because you write a local book on local folklore doesn't make you an expert on ghosts. Yes, it makes you a little bit more knowledgeable than others on the local folklore and the local stories. But again, unless you're actually doing the work and getting involved, which this person is, he's been doing it a long time, so I'm not going to bash him, but you know, is just kind of paraphrasing there. What are you really doing to further the field? You should be asking yourself that if you're an investigator and you're traveling the world, going to locations or trying to find Zach Bagans on tour or whatever, or going to these conventions as a groupie or whatever. That's a whole other thing too. I've noticed that there's a lot of paranormal groupies out there. I don't have any. No, I don't have any. That would be cool though. But there's a whole subculture of paranormal groupies that follow some of these people around. I have some quite a few stories about that as well, but I won't air that on the air. Now, I've been guilty of bragging about going places, but I've learned over the years that even to travel and spend 8 hours locked up in a building, it's really not enough time to really dig into what's occurring at the location, especially under a pretty much purely subjective situation. It is fun to have the experience of going to these places, but again, it's when you're making yourself out to be an expert because you go to these locations. That's where the issue is here with this blog, is pretty much what he's saying. A lot of people would agree with this, that it doesn't make you an expert. Now, to put it into context, a ghost group in Oklahoma, was able to see this work being conducted. I was in an objective study of various rooms in an old tuberculosis hospital, and these experiments ran for years, day and night, for years, and gathered some really interesting data. But despite the thousands of hours locked in this room with no interference, there were no conclusions drawn about what caused the anomalous phenomena that occurred sporadically. And it's sporadically is not every day, not every hour, but for seconds, every few months. So it's not that easy to gather this stuff. I get it. It's pretty few and far in between, even though some people make it seem like it happens quite frequently, but it doesn't. But do your best. Go out there. Don't. It's not about us. It's not about me. I've said this a number of times. I'll be more famous after I'm dead. I want to be one of those people because of the work that I'm going to leave behind, the books that I've written, talking about the reality behind this stuff. Leave something behind. Do something that's going to change the field, but not because of something you did specifically, but influence other people. You have a better chance of changing things if you can influence more people. And that's why I write books. That's why I go to places to talk. It's not about me. It's about the world. That's why I'm sitting behind a mic talking to you guys, because I'm trying to make a difference by making you different, not trying to change you, but trying to get you to see things through different eyes, a different perspective, stepping back out of our paranormal drama filled world and seeing things for what they really are and accepting change, making a change. Maybe it's you. Maybe you're one of these people. I don't know. Maybe you know one. You can have an intervention with somebody. You can just call them out. Do what you got to do. But we have to start changing the culture because people don't take us seriously. Nowhere. Scientists don't take us seriously. Skeptics don't take us seriously. And we shouldn't take ourselves seriously. And I know a lot of people don't. So we have to do what we can do to change the culture. Is what I say is alter the culture, and let's get back to doing things that we were doing before all this stuff. What do you say? That being said, let me drop the mic. Whoops, I don't want to drop the mic. I'll probably break it. Let's go to the book of the week real quick here. And can I feel guilty now? I've talked about all that stuff, and now I'm going to talk about the book of the week. Well, let me get the link. For that scathing article. It's a great article, though. It's funny in some spots to read it. And it's a lot of it's the truth. It's not just being mean. It is the truth. There is a lot of truth to it. So do read it. Do read it. I don't care who you are or who you think you are. Just read it. It's worthwhile to kind of get that out there and to kind of go through that. It's therapeutic for some people, I think, to read that. I've shared that with a couple of people that I know that kind of fit into that category. And I got some really nasty emails about it, but it's therapy and they needed to hear it. And it wasn't coming from me. I just said, hey, I'm sharing this article with you. Don't get personal about it. But anyway, book of the week this week comes from Florida. And it's because it's felt like Florida here in Ohio for I don't know how long. I had a book of the week a few weeks ago on Key West about Robert the haunted doll, which is staring at me right now from a postcard. I'm not going to bash him. I'm not going to say anything mean about him. Thank you, Robert. May I talk about your book? Thank you. He nodded. This book is focused on the general stuff. The book that I had in the book of the week before was focused on Robert the haunted doll. Now, this book, the book of the week, is Ghosts of Key West by David L. Sloan. And David has been in Key West quite a long time. And he touts himself as the leading authority on the island's hauntings, and he should be. I mean, he's written a couple of books on them. He's an operator of one of the tour areas down there. And there's a lot of interesting history down there. And if you've never been to Key West, my goodness, you got to get down there. It's beautiful. My first time down there was back in 2005. I was on a cruise, and our last stop was Key West. And I'd always wanted to go there, but it's expensive to get there. And so we just happened to go there on a cruise, a very short cruise, and really enjoyed our time. And a couple of years later, we went back, flew down there and spent a whole week, and we fell in love. I love it down there. It is hot and humid, but it's beautiful. You have chickens running around all over the place in the wild. You have numerous bars. You can pretty much walk to anything no matter where you go. If you want some hints and tips about where to stay or things to see, let me know. I can talk to you about it. Been there, I think, 6 times now. We were just there in April of this year, again on a cruise, which is weird because the last 4 times we were there was flying down there and enjoying it. Now you can drive down there. I don't recommend it. It's not the kind of place you want to drive around down there. Lots of visitors, lots of out-of-towners, a lot of people on mopeds and bicycles, and the roads really aren't all that great. I shouldn't say not great, but they're a little narrow, and there's a lot of streets, a lot of one-way streets. It's kind of hard to navigate. A lot of taxi cabs. You know how taxi cabs drive? Well, they drive crazy down there, very crazy. It's usually a white knuckle going to the bed and breakfast from the airport. And but it's such a beautiful place. And again, if you go on a cruise, you're going to miss out because of Mallory Square. What happens when the sun goes down? It is something unlike you've never seen before. It is amazing to see what happens. I'm not even going to tell you. You've got to go and experience it yourself. The history that's down there, from the wreckers to the pirates. I don't think the pirate historian moved since St. Augustine now, unfortunately, sadly. A great place to have visited. But there's still a lot of history down there. And this book exemplifies that history. Talks about a lot of the locations, a lot of historical buildings. Not all of them are in that part of Key West, you know, Duval Street and Mallory Square and all that stuff. But some of these you can easily visit in that area. And I usually just walk around. We see all kinds of stuff just by walking around. And the book, The Ghost of Key West, again, by David L. Sloan. This book was originally written in 1998. It was reprinted in 2012, which is the book I have, and it's autographed. Thank you, David. And it covers a number of stories. Let's see. That's a handful. It's about over a dozen here. And it does start with The Enchanted Doll, which is about Robert. And the one thing that I do have to point out with this book is the one kind of downfall about it. At least to me, I like history and I like to hear how things actually happened. And the way David writes this book, a lot of people like it. A lot of people enjoy this because it keeps you engaged. It's not just this dry historical thing, painted picture, which sometimes it is kind of hard to read, but I enjoy that. I appreciate research and I appreciate history. But the way he writes this book is it's a blend of history through the eyes of kind of almost a fake story, where people that may have been involved in a story, he kind of writes dialogue for it. So it's not really exactly how things happen, but he writes the history into the story here. So it's kind of told in a fictitious concept, but it's based on facts and based on real things and real experiences. And some of these stories are based on modern day experiences in these locations. And then he ties the history into it. So it is an interesting read in that regard. But you know, my only one complaint is about the kind of the misconception of some of the truth there. But all in all, it's a great book. And I've got to see some of these places before reading this book. And now if I go again, definitely a handful of these places I want to go check out. And I think that's the purpose of the book, especially since he's David introduced ghost tours to Key West back in 1996. And back then it wasn't really as popular as what it is now. They're everywhere. There's I think at least two or three down there now that are competing. And any big city you go to, especially down south, Charleston, there's probably 15 or 20 of them. Pretty much any city in Florida, there's at least two or three in every major city. Miami has like 10 of them. It's ridiculous, but it's fun and it's interesting. What else? Real quick, I want to talk about, let me get the link in here, the chat room. I want to talk about the NASA stuff real quick. The exoplanets that were discovered. This was an announcement yesterday, and it's weird because the last time, that's kind of long here. Let me take that out. The last time they made an announcement about this, it was a big deal. It was like front page news, and it's weird because nobody really said anything about this, and it was kind of went. It was really quiet, and I wasn't sure. It was just weird. Oh yeah, I forgot about this. Let me talk real quick about this strange photograph. It was taken over the skies of Raynham, England. That's not Raynham Hall. It's Raynham, like R-A-I-N-H-A-M. It's just east of downtown London. There was a photograph taken during a thunderstorm. A guy named Mark Taylor snapped a couple of photographs and shared them on Facebook. And in the images, it appeared that a man was flying across the sky. Well, he wasn't attached to anything, say a jetpack or even a parachute, just flying across the sky like boss style, I guess. Now, the story was picked up by the media on June 9th, and then all sorts of speculation started. Was it aliens? Flying humanoids? Or was Taylor creating a hoax? Well, it turns out that it's none of the above. A woman reported it to Kent Online. She wrote in and said that she knew quite possibly that the flying person in the photograph actually was. Unfortunately, it wasn't really a flying person in that context. It was a balloon that she'd bought for her son and was a life-size stormtrooper from Star Wars. Yeah, that kind of stormtrooper. Strangely, this is the weirdest part about this story, or I probably wouldn't even have talked about this. A commenter named Malcolm Millward commented on the Facebook post of Taylor's, joking, saying 9 hours after the picture was initially posted, quote, "It was probably one of those stormtrooper balloons, LOL," unquote. We have a winner. Good job, Mr. Millward. Good job on solving the mystery before it was actually solved. Kind of cool. Kind of a weird story. And let me throw that link in there as well. Boom. Boom. And yeah, quick thing on these NASA things. They announced yesterday to the world from the Ames Research Center that they've discovered more exoplanets, 219 of them to be exact. That's a lot. And of these 219, 10 of them are rocky like Earth, not rocky like Balboa, but rocky like the planet Earth that you're sitting on right now. At least I think most of you are, and are actually in what's called the Goldilocks zone or the habitable zone of their particular solar system. Now, what that means is that they're in a zone where liquid water could form, and the planet is neither too close or too far from the sun, which would make it too hot nor too cold for the water to form and stay on the planet. If it's too hot, the water is going to boil off. It's too cold, water would not even be able to form in the first place. NASA now states that there have been 4,034 planet candidates discovered by the Kepler Space Telescope. Of these candidates, 2,335 have been verified as exoplanets. Of these 2,335, roughly 50 have been identified as near-Earth-sized candidates that exist in their system's habitable zone. And of these 50, more than 30 have been verified. So the addition of 10 more planets that are Earth-like and are in the habitable zone, that's pretty significant. But again, we'll have to wait and see the conditions of these systems. You know, as we were excited to see the last major announcement was of the TRAPPIST-1 star and the subsequent planets. And unfortunately, that didn't turn out very well, that those were, in fact, too close to their host star. So we'll have to see how this turns out. I think maybe a lot of people were just like hesitant. But still, verifying this number of stars and 10 that are potentially Earth-like, that should be exciting. It should be big front page news because this could be – one of these could eventually be a star system with intelligent life on it, unlike ours. And I mentioned last week that NASA was going to create colorful clouds in the sky in a launch that was to take place last Tuesday night. I was all excited. I was on social media pumping out up to the second updates live from their satellite feed, their Ustream feed. But that launch was ultimately canceled. And I decided not to continue posting up-to-the-minute updates on the potential launches due to the amount of times it had been canceled and looking at the weather forecast as well. Now, this rocket was supposed to launch back in May, May 31st, but it's now been scrubbed nine times, due to wind, weather, and boats in the area, and was scrubbed twice over the weekend, and was scrubbed last night due to excessive cloud cover, I believe. Now, the launch window is down to tonight and Saturday, June 24th. But today, NASA announced around 4:30 p.m. today that tonight's attempt had been scrubbed due to excessive cloud cover once again. So now there's only one more day in the window, which, again, is on June 24th. After that, it appears that the mission will be completely scrubbed for the time being. And this launch will take place at the Wallops Flight Facility in Virginia, and I'll have the link to their Ustream channel later on Saturday. I'll post it earlier. I don't know the time yet of what they're going to do, but yikes, it's pretty sad that but they need clear conditions, clear skies, minimal wind at ground level to ensure that this rock. And unfortunately, it ain't easy. It should be on a T-shirt. Science ain't easy. So they'll do the best that they can. They should. And hey, can't do images in this chat room. We're kind of in between chat rooms right now, and I normally do at the end of the show, do a little photograph there. And hopefully, seems like Skype is having some issues, I guess. But hopefully, you didn't miss much. I'm back. I'm here. I do this little image thing at the end, but the images don't pop up on this chat room that we're using right now. But if you click on the link, you can see it. It kind of takes away from the dramatic effect. But anyway, I will be back next week if all is well. And I will look forward to seeing you next week here in the chat room and who knows where else. And big thanks to Cindy, my producer, and for Dita. And to Paul, Dita, myself, and Cindy were having fun making noises in the chat room for like an hour and a half today. That was a lot of fun. But everybody else that was in the chat room and anyone else that's listening to the show live or otherwise, I really appreciate it. I do know you're listening, and you are the driving force to keeping me to continue to do this each and every week. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of research at times, but I love it. I love to read, and I love to research, and I love to bring you the truth behind the unknown and the truth from the inside, I guess, inside the studio, whatever. And I will see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.